You are live on your conference. You may proceed.
Thank you. Good evening. This is Senator Nancy Skinner. I welcome all of you who are on the line, and thank you for joining this telephone town hall. The purpose of the call, as was sent out in our notice, was to explain the shelter in place, have our county health officials, because it is our counties that have issued the health order, explain what it means, and then to direct some questions that you have sent us in advance. So I want to first thank my staff very much for preparing and organizing the event. I want to thank the experts who have joined us, who I'm going to mention in a moment, and thank you all for participating and submitting your questions in advance. This town hall will begin with our Alameda County Supervisor, Keith Carson, who will give us a brief summary of actions that Alameda County has taken that are non-health related. He'll be followed by the Public Health Director, I believe first from Contra Costa County, Dr. Chris Farnitano, who will walk through the health order and what shelter in place means. Then he will be, if our Alameda County Public Health Director is able to join us, she will also be specific about some of the things around the health order and the shelter in place. Then we will have Susan Hsu, who is our Contra Costa Public Information Officer, who, like Supervisor Carson, will give a brief overview on other actions that Contra Costa has taken. Then I will ask the questions that you, our audience, has submitted in advance and ask our experts to respond. We will get through as many of the questions that you've submitted to us as we can in the time that we have, and any that we are not able to get to, my office will respond back to each of you individually based on the question you submitted. Then I finally wanted to reassure you that our state and our counties are following the advice of all public health experts, local, state, national, and global, that we must slow the spread of this virus. And that even with the various directives that are put into place, everyone still needs to follow that basic health advice, which is wash your hands, don't touch your face, cough into an elbow, keep a distance, and if you feel sick, stay home. So before I turn it over to Supervisor Carson, the last message I'd want to give you is that while we are all sheltering in place, we can help ensure that our community has the emergency resources for the future by completing the census form. Most of us have already received in the mail the instructions to do that. There is a website, my2020census.gov, that you use to complete the form online. But call my office if you have any questions about that census form. But otherwise, really encourage everyone to do that. So now let me introduce our Alameda County Supervisor, Keith Carson, who, Keith, you go ahead.
I want to thank you, Senator Skinner, for not only hosting today's town hall meeting, but your ongoing leadership to our community and the state of California. The United States Secretary of Health and Human Services declared a public health emergency on January the 31st, 2020. March the 1st, 2020, the Alameda County Health Officer, Dr. Erica Pan, declared a local health emergency in response to COVID-19. On March the 4th, 2020, Governor Gavin Newsom declared a state of emergency to help the state prepare for a broader spread of COVID-19. On March the 11th, 2020, the World Health Organization announced that the COVID-19 outbreak can be characterized as pandemic. On March the 13th, President Trump proclaimed that COVID-19 outbreak in the United States constitutes a national emergency. And on March 16th, 2020, the Alameda County Health Officer joined six other Bay Area public health jurisdictions to issue an order for the Alameda County residents to shelter in place. And I also would like to say that on March the 16th, the White House announced a program, 15 days to slow the spread of this drastic disease. I only mention this because all day, every day, and sometimes twice a day, we've been getting pronouncements and directives and mandates from all of these levels of government on some level for local government to follow. And while all counties across this country have the statutory responsibility for being for overseeing the health, welfare, and safety of its residents, we in Alameda County, with our 1,600,000 residents, are trying to meet all of these different directives, mandates that are coming to us sometimes twice a day to provide the best service that we can to people. And so while there may appear to be confusion on the part of all of these important directives that we are mandated to follow, Alameda County is making every effort to try to not only keep up with it, but to put a process in place to deliver those services that are being mandated. Today, Alameda County, while following our public health officer's directive, we are continuing to take these kinds of actions today. And the Board of Supervisors have formally taken an action, and there are more actions to come because there are more directives that came out today. The Board of Supervisors have authorized a measure to enable that our 9,000 employees balance their personal needs with their public service obligation. Our 9,000-plus employees will be fully paid for 3 weeks of pay, even while they're working no longer from their current locations or remote locations, but they will be compensated for that pay. Our challenge in Alameda County, not unlike the challenge in most counties, is to ensure that we have enough county workers on the job to continue to provide essential services. We are first mandated to perform these areas of health, safety, and welfare, and we're making sure that we try to make sure we have enough individuals along with our contractors and our CBOs to serve our clients and the people and the residents of this area. So for the next 3 weeks and beyond, as we deal with this pandemic, we are trying to make sure that we have a sufficient amount of civil servant workers to provide all of the services in health, safety, and welfare, and as well to make sure that people receive their checks that they are very dependent upon. This past Tuesday, just 2 days ago, I, along with Supervisor Chan, passed a directive to staff to create an ordinance providing temporary 30-day moratorium on evictions. Basically, for us in the county, that's only in the unincorporated areas, Castro Valley, the Eaton area, because we only have statutory responsibility. We are the government in those unincorporated areas. But in other areas where the city councils govern the eviction laws, they are taking them up. And Berkeley and Oakland have also passed eviction moratoriums in those areas. And I should also say that Berkeley is one of the only three cities in the state of California that has its own standalone health department, and we are coordinating and communicating on a daily basis with not only their health department, their mental health department, their public health department, but also the mayor and the key city staff. We're working closely with the governor's office. Almost daily, we are having briefings by the governor as well as his administrative staff to get additional resources here in the area, emergency declaration resources for people who have to secure shelter, especially for our unhoused residents. Alameda County Sheriff's Office just today released more than 300 inmates from Santa Rita this week in Dublin. And so far, as a result of this pandemic, and on Wednesday, one of our judges released 67 inmates on their own. And the sheriff announced that an additional 240-some people from jail, those who are low-level offenders, not those who have committed major felonies, will be released with early release from jail. So all day long, every day, we're receiving new directives from the president, from Congress, and even today, the president and Governor Newsom have said that the USS Mercy, which is a military medical ship, will be docking in our bay to also be a backup for the challenges that we have in this area. We also know that we're going to be receiving an additional 800 of these trailers that have been released in different parts of the country to house the unhoused, especially those who are being diagnosed with this disease. And we also anticipate about 347 hotel rooms that will be allocated and subsidized and paid for with both state and local monies to meet this demand, which we know that as testing starts to take place, we'll get a better sense of how many people actually in this area have that dreaded disease. So I'm encouraging everybody to go online to www.acphd.org to receive up-to-the-minute information regarding all of the responses that Alameda County is taking regarding this, because we want to make sure that people are informed by reliable sources up to the moment. And again, I want to thank you very much, Senator Skinner, for hosting this town hall meeting.
Supervisor Carson, you have also been wonderful in displaying great leadership for all of our residents. And could you, right before I move on to the next person and also give everyone a little notice about what the governor just announced, could you also just mention, I understand that while the county only has the responsibility to put the moratorium and evictions on the unincorporated areas, our Alameda County Sheriff, has suspended all eviction enforcement. So the Sheriff's Office will not be doing any eviction enforcement throughout Alameda County.
That is absolutely correct. He's actually put that in the print, and so that is also a major relief. And as we go forward past April the 7th, I'm sure we'll be continuing to expand those directives past those time periods.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Supervisor Carson. And then right before I introduce Dr. Chris Farnitano, who is the public health officer for Contra Costa County, the governor did just announce a statewide shelter in place. We will get to the issue of testing a bit later, but the governor did just announce statewide shelter in place. Now, Dr. Chris Farnitano, Contra Costa County public health officer, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Senator Skinner. I want to explain why our counties have issued these health orders to individuals to shelter in place. It's really based on a concept known as flatten the curve. What we saw in Wuhan, China, and are seeing in places like Italy now, is that when everyone gets sick all at once, it can overwhelm the hospitals and the healthcare system, and more people will die as a result. So by slowing down the spread of infection throughout a community, fewer people get sick all at once, and the healthcare system is more able to manage those and care for those individuals, and we hope there will be fewer deaths overall. And very importantly, we can buy time until we have more testing available, we have more medicines are developed to treat COVID-19, known as the novel coronavirus, and eventually we can have a vaccine. So this is all about doing our part to save lives. Now, under California state statutes, county health officers do have the authority to deliver such directives. And these health orders have been issued so far by Contra Costa County as well as all the other Bay Area counties. And as Senator Skinner mentioned, just now announced by the governor for the entire state of California. And all of these directives are very similar, and they direct people to stay at home and limit their contact with other people, except when they have to be out for essential services like getting food, working in essential industries, and getting other necessities. Just to illustrate our reason for our concern, 3 weeks ago, Contra Costa County had its first confirmed community-acquired case of COVID-19. A week ago Monday, we were up to 10 cases, and as of this afternoon, we now have 42 confirmed cases. And this rapid rise of numbers is what we've seen in other countries and what we've been seeing across the Bay, across California, and across the nation. And so we need to act now while the numbers are still small before they rise much quicker to numbers that are much more difficult to manage. We also feel that we are underestimating the number of cases because there has been a shortage of testing, which is getting better, but is still not at the point where we want to be. So we haven't been able to test everyone up to this point that we would like to test. And we are concerned there are cases out there that have not been diagnosed. And that, again, makes it very important for people to practice these good hand washing practices shelter in place, do social distancing, and try to minimize contact with other people so that we can protect ourselves, protect our loved ones, and protect our community. So just a little bit of basics about the shelter-in-place order. So folks are advised to stay at home as much as possible. There are essential services like healthcare. There's essential workers that are key for key government functions. Restaurants are asked to close except to they can do takeout and delivery function. Bars are all asked to close. Most businesses are asked to close unless they fall into one of those essential functions. So there are many exceptions to keep the essential functions of a society going, but as much as possible, the more people can stay at home, the more this is going to be effective and flatten that curve.
Dr. Farnitano, thank you so much for providing us the information. Let me see if Dr. Erica Pan is on the line yet.
Yes, I'm here.
Great. Thank you, Doctor. Dr. Erica Pan is the Interim Health Director for Alameda County, and she is going to go in some more details regarding shelter-in-place, but also some specifics about Alameda County. Go ahead, Dr. Pan.
Great. Thank you very much, Senator Skinner, and I also agree. Thank you so much for hosting this town hall so we can get good information out to constituents. And I want to also thank Supervisor Carson for his leadership and his role serving on the Alameda County Health Committee and his overall support of public health and health equity here in Alameda County. And a minor clarification, I'm the interim health officer for Alameda County Public Health. No problem. And as of today, we have 35 cases and zero deaths in Alameda County, and at least 8 of those are community acquired. We do have several cases that have been recently reported that we are still investigating. And similar to just to reiterate a little bit of what Dr. Farnitano mentioned, you know, what we saw literally kind of over the weekend and what led to this dramatic intervention on Monday was really seeing an exponential increase in cases just over the last few days in the Bay Area. And as far as talking more about what does shelter in place mean for individuals, businesses, and workers, again, Dr. Farnitano highlighted some key things. I think I know one question a lot of people have are what are considered essential businesses? And again, our overall intent of this was to think through what are essential businesses so that individuals and our society can continue to function while also optimizing social distancing and really minimizing any person-to-person interactions. So the categories broadly that we have highlighted in our Bay Area health officer orders are healthcare operations and essential infrastructure, everything that has to do with food, whether it's grocery stores, farmers markets, you know, up the supply chain before that, and certainly, as mentioned, restaurants for takeout and delivery, and food cultivation is certainly included. Businesses that provide food, shelter, and social services and other necessities of life for the economically disadvantaged or otherwise needy individuals. And we, of course, the getting good information is so key, so everything related to journalism and newspapers and media services, things related to fuel and gas stations and auto supply and repair and maintenance, banks and financial institutions, hardware stores, other services related to home safety and maintenance, such as plumbers, electricians, exterminators, et cetera. Businesses providing mailing and shipping services, because, again, if we want to minimize person-to-person interactions, mailing and shipping and delivery are very important. And as far as educational institutions in our orders in the Bay Area, we have wanted them to be able to facilitate distance learning or perform essential functions, including providing food services to children in their districts. Laundromats, dry cleaners, and laundry service. I already mentioned restaurants. And then we also included categories around businesses that supply products for people to work from home and other supplies, transportation for essential activities, and then home-based care for dependents, and certainly people that staff and work for residential facilities and shelters for people of all ages. We also know that, again, along with financial institutions, other professional services such as legal or accounting services are crucial. And then child care facilities are allowed to operate with some caveats around making sure keeping the limit to 12 or fewer and really trying not to mix the groups with each other and trying to keep one adult or one provider with one group of children rather than mixing. So those are some high-level kind of how we grouped. And, of course, over time we've heard about various things that we're continuing to clarify and update our frequently asked questions that are on all of our websites and trying to coordinate across the jurisdictions. We're not sure yet exactly how much this aligns with the state order that just came out, but we're hopeful that it was largely modeled after what we did and that will be very similar. And I know some other common questions that have come in for constituents have been, can I go outside? What can I do outside? And for all of these principles, again, we really ask that people do these things to maintain their health and activity, but to maintain social distancing. So we absolutely want people to be able to go out and walk or run or ride their bicycles, take advantage of our beautiful East Bay regional parks, but just, again, maintaining six-foot distance from people that are outside their usual household and not having any gatherings outside of your usual household or, again, going to work if you are part of essential government functions or essential businesses. I think those are kind of the highlights that I wanted to cover and help you guys understand our intent.
Thank you, Dr. Pan. Really appreciate it.
Sure.
Now I want to turn to Susan. Susan, I forgot to ask you how to pronounce your last name. Is it?
It's Susan Hsu.
Susan Hsu. Great. And she is the public information officer for Contra Costa County. And she can relate to us some of the other actions that Contra Costa County has done, similar to what Supervisor Carson did for us. So, Susan Hsu, go ahead.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Senator, for giving us the opportunity to join your virtual town hall today. Certainly, Contra Costa County has been highly mobilized for some time and has been working in tandem with Contra Costa Health Services and Dr. Fornitano and his team to get the messaging out. Contra Costa County issued an emergency proclamation on March 10th in order to mobilize staff and resources to respond to COVID-19. As you know, certainly supporting various communities from the homeless to what do we do about childcare to every possible population, Contra Costa Health Services has been working very closely with everyone, including the schools recently, and they continue to work closely with the school superintendents across the county. As you know, perhaps you may not know, but let me share with you that the Contra Costa County Sheriff's Office, like Alameda County, is suspending evictions in the county. Sheriff Livingston has directed that no evictions will occur until further notice. On their website, which I encourage you to follow if you are interested in the sheriff's current information, on his website, cocosheriff.org, it notes right on the front page there that cancellation of jail visits have occurred because of the need to respond to coronavirus. So in order to prevent the spread of it in Contra Costa County detention facilities, the Sheriff's Office has temporarily canceled all professional, official, and social visits at the Martinez, West County, and Marsh Creek detention facilities. The Sheriff, along with the entire county, takes this matter very seriously. The website does note, however, that attorney visits will continue with access to non-contact visit rooms only. So do visit cocosheriff.org for that particular information. Meanwhile, the rest of the county, as I mentioned, is fully mobilized to support everyone. We continue to provide services. The county is here. And I would encourage you to visit two key websites. Updates and information. I think part of what's important for the public and all of us to understand with the health order is really what does it mean? We have provided some answers to frequently asked questions. It's available in English and Spanish. And in fact, based on calls and questions coming into the county, that document is being updated on a daily basis. So you'll want to check our websites. There are two sites you can go to. The first one is the Contra Costa Health Services, and that is cchealth.org/coronavirus. Again, cchealth.org/coronavirus. The second website is the county's website, and that is contracosta.ca.gov. Again, contracosta.ca.gov. That has additional information about county services. As you can imagine, the county cares very much about its employees, and we also have issued guidance for staff to work remotely whenever possible. But at the same time, we are here. We continue to operate. We continue to function. So for additional information, we will be updating the county website with departmental changes, essentially restricting or limiting the public access to some of the offices while providing more services virtually. I think that's important because we too, like the public, needs to follow the health order. I would say, I do want to share that Contra Costa County has a call center. That call center, please feel free, it operates 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., 7 days a week. You can call and get service in English and Spanish. And we're happy to help answer any of your questions about the health order. That number for the Contra Costa Call Center related to the health order is 1-844-729-8410. Let me repeat that. It's 1-844-729-8410. Again, 7 days a week, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. And then after hours, if you need to reach someone to speak to someone in Contra Costa County, you can also call 211. They are also a strong partner for us in this effort. I would encourage you to visit both websites, the county and cchealth.org/coronavirus. And please, I would encourage as we share education and continue to maintain calmness and to support one another in the community as neighbors and community members, that you share this information because, as Dr. Fornitano and other health officials have said, I think it matters that we do more, that we take bold, aggressive measures. And I am quoting the health officer, that we take bold, aggressive measures now because if it works, then what we will have done is that we won't see what has occurred in other communities and other countries. So it might seem like a lot, but the health officials and officers are correct in what they're doing, and I hope everyone can follow the order. And that's what I would like to share. And again, Senator, thank you very much for this time.
Thank you, Susan Chu, for providing that. And I want to just say to anyone who may have joined this call late that this is the telephone town hall meeting that my office, Senator Nancy Skinner, organized to help deliver information about the shelter-in-place and the health order that our counties have issued, which the governor has now, we don't know yet if it's identical, but has issued a similar order statewide. And I think it's very important what both Dr. Fornitano and Dr. Pan and Supervisor Carson and Ms. Hsu relayed is we want to use reliable websites for our information. There, as we know, there's much out there. There's a lot of scare information, and this is obviously a very scary time, but I think it's very important to use reliable websites. Our county websites, our public health departments are very reliable, and the governor now has on his very own website a California COVID link that would take you to any of the specific actions and programs or departments that California has underway in response to this virus. And that will have reliable information compared to many other sites you might go to. Now, I'm going to start reading the questions that were submitted in advance. And I really appreciate all of our experts staying on because you can never tell who is going to be able to answer these. Some of them you have addressed in your comments so far, so I will skip through some. But first one, constituents ask, do they need to cancel travel plans? Dr. Fornitano, do you want to answer that?
Sure. I think there are many travel plans that will need to be canceled, and it all depends on where they're going. If you are going to a place where you could go to a small cabin and kind of shelter in place in a remote cabin, that might be fine. But most travel is going to involve contact with others, and really is going to be out of the spirit of shelter in place, and you may be putting yourself more at risk by being in contact with other people during your travels. So most travels should probably be canceled unless you are actually relocating to a place where you can more effectively shelter in place.
Anyone else want to add to that before I go to the next one? Okay, so the next one is, and Dr. Pan, you can address this if you like. I live with an individual who still has to work, but I am an immunocompromised over 65, age 65 individual. What do I do to protect myself?
So that's a great question. And actually, on the flip side of that, I did want to make sure I know, again, to just to mention, and then I'll answer that question, that I know this is, you know, a time where a lot of people are very concerned and there's a lot of anxiety, but the vast majority of people do have very mild disease, and that it is absolutely true that the persons we are most concerned about and that we are doing all of these measures to protect the most are people over 65 and with other underlying medical conditions. I think it's really important as well to know that we do think the transmission of this disease is primarily from people who are symptomatic, passing it on to other people. There certainly is evolving information to suggest that there may be some part of transmission before people have symptoms, but we're still learning about that. And in general, we know in general for most viruses, and we think for this one that the vast majority of transmission happens when people are symptomatic. So if someone in the house is still doing their daily again, helping function for essential government functions or essential businesses, they just need to be very conscious of any symptoms. For some of our healthcare workers that may have been exposed to actually confirmed cases, we're having them do a temperature check every morning. So someone could be really conservative that way as well. And at the first sign of any symptoms, really trying to stay away from the other person in their home. For the other example I would say is that for people who are ill who have been confirmed positive cases, there are a lot of guidelines on the CDC website about how to try to stay separate within a home and have someone who's ill have their own bedroom and their own bathroom and try to stay apart from each other, as well as we don't recommend masks for the general public, but if somebody has symptoms and they're going to be around someone else in their home, to wear a mask in that situation.
Yes, that was the next question, is whether someone needs to wear a mask when they go outside to access essential services.
And again, just since I had that topic, I'll just add on that no, that is not a current recommendation. And really what's important right now, too, is that we're having such a shortage of personal protective equipment, both regular masks and the N95 respirators for our healthcare workers, that we really want to prioritize those resources for our frontline healthcare workers to take care of ill people.
Thanks. The next question was, what are the enforcement mechanisms of the order, including for businesses?
This is Dr. Parmitano. I can just say that the orders all are legal orders that are enforced by local law enforcement. They are considered misdemeanors that can be have consequences of either a fine or even imprisonment. I believe most of our law enforcement agencies are really trying to take an educational approach to people who may not be following these orders and trying to educate people about the importance of this order and the importance of sheltering in place, that is for their benefit, is the benefit of their loved ones and the benefit of the community. And I think we have found so far that educational approach has really been working. But ultimately, if there is someone who is really not willing to follow this and is really posing a risk to the community, there is the legal ability to charge somebody with a misdemeanor offense, which could include, again, a fine or even leading to jail time.
So on that enforcement, anyone can join in. This is The question was also, how do I determine if I'm an essential employee? And this was partly folks who felt they were being required to be essential employees and felt perhaps they were not.
So for, this is Dr. Ponigan, at least as far as essential government functions and actually for essential businesses, we really are relying on those individual government entities, whether it's a special water district or a city, to determine on their own who they deem essential.
And retail and such like that, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Keith, and I just want to say that we started in Alameda County on this past Monday having all of our department heads to kind of do a survey of employees throughout their particular system to try and identify areas where there are key and essential services that people are extremely dependent upon, since we do have a statutory responsibility for overseeing the health, safety, and welfare of people. So in many cases, that would be the hospitals and community clinics that we contract with in the healthcare area. Social service, making sure that individuals receive their payment on time, is pretty critical for a number of individuals, as well as over in our juvenile hall and also at Santa Rita and throughout our primary system, because of the fact that while we have issued and taken an action to, for the next 3 weeks, pay all 9,000 plus of our employees, hoping that many of them will work on site where they're needed to provide key essential services to the public, that we have a responsibility to continue to try to provide those critical services to, which includes payment of checks that are pretty essential at this time. We are getting some early indication that we might have to revisit an incentive of some sort to keep our key essential employees at the site, because individuals are concerned about their immediate health, and we don't have opportunities at this point in time to do a comprehensive testing throughout all of Alameda County with our employees. And they also have family members that they have to take care of, and in many cases, children who are out of school. So we have surveyed. We are taking that information and data and trying to constantly recalculate how we provide the services and keep the lights on and keep the essential services operating in Alameda County. Even as all day long we still get new mandates and directives and have to restructure how we're providing these services on, almost on a daily basis, and appear to be at least non-interruptive for people who are dependent upon.
Supervisor Carson, really appreciate that explanation. And I think, clearly some government workers, some healthcare workers may wonder about whether they're in the category of essential or not, but most of the questions we've received have not been from a government worker or a health worker, but rather from private sector workers, security guards, and individuals who may work for, say, a retail outlet. So if someone could address that, that would be very helpful.
This is Dr. Farnitano. I would direct individuals to read the respective order from their county. And also, both Alameda and Contra Costa County's websites have a FAQ page, which tries to help explain and interpret the health officer order. The health officer orders are very detailed, and FAQ pages provide more detail. So I would direct people who have questions, to look at those to help guide them as to trying to understand whether their work is considered essential or not.
Great. Now, next question was, is there a concern with the long-term impact on food supply? Should the shelter-in-place be extended?
I'll jump in. This is Dr. Pond. I do not have any concerns about the food supply or food supply chain based on this. We very intentionally tried to make sure that not only, endpoint stores and restaurants would stay open so that people would get food, but that supply chain and transportation for food would be allowed to continue to operate. So, and I think that's actually a great to also make sure we get that message out that we don't, you know, we don't anticipate any major supply chain disruptions right now, and so we don't see any need locally to, you know, hoard specific products. We do, again, want our key businesses and essential businesses to stay open and for people to go with social distancing, but to get the products they need, you know, when they need them.
All right, so now I'm going to switch to some questions that were related to seniors, because we can imagine.
If I could just respond real quickly,
Senator Skinner.
As of yesterday, the Economic Development Alliance for Business, which is the largest business association in both Contra Costa and Alameda County, began the process of also bringing together its executive committee, which is comprised of a diverse leadership base from not only large, medium, and small businesses, but also the academic sector, the philanthropic sector, the labor sector, and government sector. Many of the cities in both Contra Costa and Alameda County have mayors sitting on that, are attempting to look at how things may roll out going past April the 7th, knowing that that's a reality, and attempting to not only do economic oversight and analysis of what those impacts may be financially, but the abilities on many of these for-profit businesses as well as nonprofit agencies as well as governmental entities to see what the infrastructure could possibly be going past April the 7th, since that may be a reality. Hopefully through this process and hopefully with the Bay Area Council being the largest business association in the nine Bay Area counties, we will try to be as proactive in understanding what the scenarios and impacts may be, some to key essential lifeline services that are provided and businesses that provide those services, as well as the supply chain, the food chain, as well as getting those merchandises, food included, to the respective areas that might be retail sites and or direct delivery to individuals while they're sheltering in place.
Thank you. Greatly appreciate that further explanation. So now I'll move to the questions related to seniors. So many of our constituents have elderly relatives, you know, quite elderly, and they want to know if it's safe for them to visit those elderly parents, especially not knowing whether they're carrying the virus, and also whether they could travel to another county to visit that their elderly relative.
This is Dr. Parnitano. The elderly are the folks we're most worried about. We know that the death rate goes up very dramatically as people get older, and the folks in their 70s and 80s are at the highest risk. So we also know that those elderly people need support, and so they may need be counting on their families to help provide them with groceries and other things. Well, we do really encourage that you try to minimize any contact with your elderly relatives, and if you are bringing them needed supplies and things, you do it in a way that doesn't involve any direct contact, possibly leaving groceries by the doorstep or something like that, so that you are minimizing the number of contacts and you're maintaining social distance. Because these are the folks we are most worried about. And so try to contact them by phone, by a video conference, by social media. Stay in contact with the elderly, because they're going to be very lonely and they're going to need us, but try to minimize that physical contact as much as possible.
Anyone want to add to that before I add the next question is somewhat, is not completely similar, but again, a senior-oriented question. which is, should the seniors, 65 and above, who do not have underlying health conditions, avoid, for example, shopping and even or even being outside?
I will take that one. This is Dr. Pan. So, again, we definitely encourage people to be outside as long as they, again, avoid other people and maintain a six-foot distance from other people. I think if they can get someone else or get their food delivered to them or have someone else bring them food, and as Dr. Fontana said, avoiding physical contact, that would be the most preferable. And, again, we want to just minimize any chances of person-to-person spread disease. So we know sometimes, you know, the practicalities are more difficult, but the recommendation would be to have things delivered by other people. But we do want people to get out and exercise. And I will completely admit, after seeing 2 days of my children having distance learning, I think we need to really work on how we make sure people are getting out and getting exercise but maintaining social distancing from others.
Great. So now I'm going to move to some jobs and business questions. So this one was that, can businesses that provide services which can be done while social distancing but may not be deemed as essential, gardening, tree trimming, dog walking, various things like that, can they, with social distancing, continue to operate?
This is Dr. Fernitano. I'll answer that question. So there are things that are essential, and dog walking, that's essential to taking care of a dog, and other kind of veterinary care is considered essential. But most landscaping type of activities that aren't really essential for life and safety really are not considered essential services. So those are covered in the health officer order as businesses that are not allowed to continue.
And this goes back to one I raised somewhat before, but it's a bit different, which is the constituent felt that it seemed rather arbitrary that employers have the power to determine which employees are essential, and they wanted to know whether our counties had any plans to work with our state EDD or in themselves take an action to protect workers who want to observe the shelter in place but are being told that they are essential. So security guards were one example of that. There were a couple of other job types that asked this question, and they weren't healthcare workers or food workers.
I would underscore, this is Keith Carson again, I would underscore individuals who have that specific question in mind, and it seems to be one that it has some discretion on some level in terms of defining it, should really take time to go to each of the counties that have already put in place this order and read the section and try to interpret it based on what is written. I know that our lawyers in Alameda County spent quite a bit of time looking at Section 10, which deals with essential services for Alameda County. And based on that, we have government interpreting it one way and business attempting to interpret it the same way. And unfortunately, and hopefully we don't have to go and litigate it, that people will keep in mind what the basic reason for all of this is to make sure that we're proactive in terms of having people to shelter in place, maintain distance, to go through the appropriate healthcare habits in order to stay healthy. And while everybody is concerned about the economy, if you don't take care of your health, then I'm sure that the economy will go down anyway. And it'd be interesting to also find out how much of this is aligned with the new state order that the governor is just now, as we speak and as we've been online, is putting into place to see if essential services and all of this is aligned, or we get a state interpretation of it.
Thanks. That's a very good point, because we're in a very fluid situation. It's changing regularly, as we just as I just indicated, the governor making his announcement. So we will be analyzing that, our state senate office, and trying to send our constituents out some guidance regarding that. But the next what I'm going to jump to now is, and at the end of the call, I will mention some of the resources for folks who have had either been laid off or had their hours reduced. But I'm going to jump now to the questions regarding tests. And, of course, the universal question is, where and when can people get tested? And why not?
I'll take that. This is Dr. Farnitano. So we're mostly directing individuals to go to their normal site of healthcare, going to their primary care provider, and request testing. We're advising providers to follow CDC guidance on testing. If someone does not have a primary care provider or has been having trouble getting access to their primary care provider, seeking another source of care, which could be an urgent care center, it could be an emergency room. But we really emphasize that people who don't have symptoms, for the most part, should not be tested. We really want to focus our testing on people who have symptoms, and the main symptoms are fever and cough and shortness of breath. In fact, 90% of cases that we've seen based on other countries involve fever. So a fever and a cough is a very concerning group of symptoms, or fever and trouble breathing. But if you have any of those symptoms, the best thing to do is to actually call your doctor's office and see if you can get a phone conversation or a phone appointment and talk to them and see if you really need to come in, because we don't want people coming into the doctor's office who don't need to be examined, and your questions might be addressed by phone first. And then if you are coming in, then the office can be prepared and ready to test you or direct you to a place where you can get tested.
Can anyone address why we have a shortage of tests, or the fact that there is a shortage?
This is Dr. Pond. I can acknowledge that we have a shortage, and the other things I would add are that there is a combination of some limited public health laboratory testing in both Contra Costa and Alameda County. Labs have local testing, and then there's a statewide lab for viral testing is actually nearby in Richmond. And then more and more commercial labs are coming online. So Quest came online last week and had a limited capacity, but is ramping up, as we understand it, this week, although even for this week, the last number I heard was around 5,000 tests per day, and I think that was either for the whole state or possibly the whole country. But they are slowly ramping up, and more and more commercial labs are coming online, as well as academic centers. So we do hope moving forward there will be more availability, but as Dr. Fontana said, right now it's unfortunately quite limited. But we are all advocating for getting more testing and hope that that will evolve soon.
I am imagining the governor, now that he's issued such an order, will provide some additional information about that. But I think it's important for people to know that the issue that there's, because the test for this virus was technically developed very recently, it has a very it needs a very specific reagent. And that reagent in itself is in short supply. So that is one of the issues around the lack of availability of widespread testing is due to that reagent, which is only manufactured in a few locations. And I know there's work being done now to try to expand the ability to manufacture that reagent, but that will take some time. So there's lots of issues regarding the tests. But is there anyone who can shed any light on, there's been a lot of reference to that World Health Organization potentially had tests available and that the U.S. or places in the U.S. did not take advantage of those. Can any of you address that?
This is Dr. Fernitano. I can't admit to being a real expert on the different regulatory processes around what the U.S. government did around testing, but we do. What I can say is that other countries have been able to ramp up their testing capabilities much more quickly than the United States has, and that has led to this challenge of not being able to expand testing as quickly as possible, and leading us to not be concerned that we're not diagnosing all the people who are out there who may be coming down sick with this virus. And it may have led us to not pick up this community spread of the virus as soon as we would have liked to. That situation is getting better, but we're still not at the place where we are testing as many people as we would like to be testing.
Thank you. And then an additional question was, do we know how long does a person with a confirmed case of the novel corona COVID-19 stay contagious?
So this is Dr. Pan. There is evolving data on this as well, especially because for the early cases in the United States, clearance from isolation was based on testing every day or every other day until the person was negative. And some people, and I think the other thing from a technical perspective to realize is the test is a PCR or polymerase chain reaction test, which looks for the RNA of the virus, but does not necessarily tell you if that person is infectious. But we have seen that people have been test positive for up to 4 weeks, sometimes as short as a week to 14 days. But again, that test being positive, and this is true for other viruses as well, does not necessarily mean if you tried to culture that virus and grow it that it was actually could grow and or infect someone else. So now that we have more cases in the United States where we're having to, and this limited testing capacity, we don't want to use those precious tests, and actually the swabs are the other issue now. They're about to be in shortage, so not only are the reagents limited, but now we're seeing that we're potentially needing to order and manufacture more swabs to do the nasopharyngeal swabs. So anyway, the estimate is probably about a week to 4 weeks for how long they could test positive, but it seems like the most infectious time is probably about 7 days after the onset of symptoms. And then the other guideline we've been using for cases now is 72 hours or 3 days after the last symptoms when we deem that person no longer infectious.
Great, appreciate it. So then the last question, and then I just am going to make some information-type announcements. Last question, and Dr. Fornitano, you kind of referenced this when you talked about trying to address this flattening the curve. And the question was, that do our hospitals and clinics have the capacity to handle high demands of patients with this virus?
Well, that's certainly a big concern, that if this virus spreads rapidly and people all get sick at once, that we may not have the hospital capacity, enough beds in hospitals, enough intensive care unit beds, because even though most people have very mild disease, most people don't need to be hospitalized, and only a very small percentage of people wind up in an intensive care unit. When you scale that up to very, very large numbers and a high percentage of the population, those small percentages become really big numbers. And our hospital care system is really built on very small margins of extra beds and extra equipment. And so our ability to surge and increase to accommodate a large number of patients at the same time needing that hospital care. And some of these sick people who require, or the very sick who require intensive care unit care, may need to be in the hospital for several weeks at a time. So while they're there, they're not freeing up that bed for another individual. So you know, we looked at previous epidemics all the way back to the 1918 influenza epidemic, which is probably the closest thing we can look to in history for what's going on right now with COVID-19. And we saw that there were cities that took drastic action right away and canceled public events, and there are other cities that said, oh, there's nothing to worry about, and we can continue in business as usual. And we saw a dramatic difference there in how quickly the numbers shot up in the cities that did not take severe action, and they had more deaths, more hospitalizations, and a bigger impact to their healthcare system. So that's all about the concept of spreading out the spread, buying us time, spreading out the impact on the healthcare system so we're not overwhelmed. I know hospitals now are all working together to try to free up more capacity, thinking creatively about how they can turn non-ICU rooms into intensive care unit rooms, thinking about how they can turn beds they're not using as hospital beds or rooms they're not using as hospital rooms into hospital rooms, ways to creatively expand our hospital capacity to prepare for any surge in demand for hospital beds that we might see.
Greatly appreciate that answer. And let me thank everyone who participated, all of our experts. I'm going to give a little bit of information in a moment, but let me first thank Alameda County Supervisor Keith Carson, Dr. Chris Farnitano, the health officer from Contra Costa County, and Dr. Erica Pan, the interim health officer for Alameda County, and Susan Hsu, who is the public information officer for Contra Costa County, for joining us and providing us this good information. And then what I want to do as wrap up is just mention that we have also been getting concerns or calls around things like income tax filing, and I wanted to just relay that the state has extended both the income tax filing deadline and the payment deadline until July, and the federal government, the IRS, has extended the payment of income tax deadline, but not the filing deadline. So they, at this moment, the IRS is still requiring everyone to file by April 15th. Within the state of California, if you have an expired driver's license or you think it's going to be expired, do not worry about it. All driver's license expirations have been extended. And then there has been an expansion of paid sick leave benefits for Californians, as well as the waiver of a week delay on unemployment benefits. And to look at those various things, you can go to the California Employment Development Department website. And then in terms of small business relief, that is being offered by the federal government. And to look at what's available, you would go to the U.S. Small Business Administration website. And has been mentioned, a variety of our cities have now enacted moratoriums on any eviction. But meanwhile, both counties, countywide, the sheriffs have suspended any eviction enforcement. So folks do not have to worry about that at the moment. So as has been said multiple times and as evidenced by the governor's announcement this evening while we started our call of a statewide shelter in place, this situation is changing rapidly. So I know my office is being contacted by constituents, as all of our different offices, Supervisor Carson's and the rest. And based on what we hear from you, we will set up future calls on topics, for example, like worker relief or others, as appropriate. So I really appreciate, again, all the experts for joining us and my staff for organizing this and all of you who listened. And with that, we will conclude this telephone town hall. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us. Good night.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Dr. Skinner.
And that does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for your participation and for using AT&T Teleconference. You may now disconnect.